We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
If y'all ready, give me a hell yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
Today, we're gonna talk a lot of sports.
What time is the fun?
But
49.
At the end of the hour, we're going to break away from serious sports and schedule a little bit of fun.
Okay.
Because it's fun. We're having fun.
It's not fun. This is not fun.
That, I appreciate that, because sometimes I wonder, is this fun, what we're doing?
Guys, I hope everybody knows that I consider this fun.
Okay, say so. Hub thinks it's fun.
He was, for some reason, felt the need to justify appearing on our radio show.
Correct.
I think it was my resting level of discomfort.
By saying...
Guys, I hope everybody knows that I consider this fun.
Good.
And here's the controversy. Listen, we love fun, right?
We're with Grant on that.
The people who have the most fun, by the way, have to tell you that they are.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not fun. This is not fun.
See, damn it.
Did that need to be said?
It feels like it's fun.
Where we're at right now as fighters and people and teammates, it's not fun.
Hub?
Guys, I hope everybody knows that I consider this fun.
You know, Hub, I think you hit a great point there. This is not fun.
I'm very confused.
Hi there, how you doing? My name's Mr. Adams, and I'm with Child Protective Services. Here's my headshot. We like to have fun here.
One, two, three,
and here we go.
Here we go.
Here we go, Jim.
Here we go, Tony.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show, afternoons 2 to 6 on Chicago's Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
We always try to have a ton of fun here on that show. Very much enjoyed that today from Chris Tannehill. Top of the hour brought to you by DuckDuckGo. Have something that would be fun for a Bears fan tonight, Spiegs. Anthony Herron and Lance Briggs, the latest Miller Lite Top Draft show, follows us 6 o'clock to 9 at Flo and Santos right here in Chicago.
Oh.
While you're there, register for a chance to win Miller Lite loft tickets to a Futures Bear home game brought to you by Miller Lite, proud beer partner of your Chicago Bears. Taste Bears fans can depend on. It's Miller time.
Flo and Santos is a home game for me. I won't be in the neighborhood tonight, but man, I love that place. Real good pizza, real good pierogies, because Flo is Polish and Santos Italian, so...
I see what they did there.
You can get ravirogis there, which are the ravioli-pierogi hybrid. You can get kielbasa on a pizza over there. It's a very inventive and fun place.
So go check them out. 6 to 9, Lance Briggs is there from 7 to 8:30. Anthony Herron hosting the whole show. Of course, it's all brought to you by Miller Lite.
Man, it's been a weird day. Been a really fun day in a lot of ways. We had an interview with Adam McKay, legendary director, writer, Chicago improv comedy stalwart, Adam McKay, in the 3 o'clock hour. But the whole day started for most of us around 1 o'clock listening in to the Blackhawks press conference, where they did not take questions, gave a statement with Rocky and Danny Wirtz sitting at a table in front of a white void. And then the lawyer from, is it Jenner and Block?
That's right.
And the firm that had conducted the independent organization, him sitting in front of a white void, telling you all the findings from the investigation into the Blackhawks, and a lot of very, very damning stuff.
So the biggest headline for the Hawks fan today is Stan Bowman's out, right? Like he was allowed to resign, and his statement was very pass the buck. I thought John McDonough, you know, he... I didn't know how serious this was until recently, and John McDonough told us that he was going to handle it, and he didn't. I wish I would have done more. Mm-hmm. And the Blackhawks praised, if this would have happened today, the Stan that I know would not have done this. So
yes, it was a very soft exit, frankly, from the Blackhawks organization for Stan Bowman.
Which was ugly and unnecessary. I know why they did it that way, because they feel like those banners hang largely because of Stan Bowman, and they felt like they owed him something. But, man, not necessary, and his statement was weak. The crazy thing about this,
And by the way, just real quick, he remains the GM of USA Hockey at this moment, and there's a lot of people calling for him to be removed from that, because there are Aldridge family roots with USA Hockey as well.
So that's another part of this is... So, let's start with a good, right? There is a good that no member of the executive level, the leadership of the Blackhawks at that time, John McDonough, Joel Quenneville, Stan Bowman, McIsaac, nobody who was in the room at the time where it was reported what happened to John Doe from Brad Aldridge, the former video coordinator, is currently with the team anymore, either because McDonough left or McIsaac now out, Bowman now out, they're all gone.
Yep.
That is good, right? Like that amount of, hey, we can say to you, we have a new president, this is a new day, this was an independent report. Anybody who we know by evidence had that reported to them that had any degree of power at the time is no longer with the organization. And that's pretty much where the good ends as far as I see it.
Yeah, and even that feels a little... A little vague to me, because we don't know who else along that power structure knew and is spared just because they weren't specifically and publicly named in the report.
I agree with that, obviously. Like, is it hard to believe that no member of the Wirtz family had any word about this when that many people at the time knew? Yeah, that is really hard for me to believe, frankly. Players knew about it. Secretaries knew about it. The executive committee knew about it. It's hard to believe. This independent investigation that was scathing to the Blackhawks, and, you know, it did stop at John McDonough. That's true. And McDonough's not here anymore.
By the way, Stan Bowman has indeed stepped down now as the GM
of
USA Hockey. Okay. The 2022 men's team.
That part of it will always feel a little incomplete. It's just, maybe it's my cynicism. It seems like unless you have a smoking gun, it always stops before the billionaires. Right? Did the Washington football team start leaking these emails to make Bruce Allen and John Gruden the fall guys for the culture that happened at that organization under Dan Snyder, right? That seems to happen often. And we don't know. If they would have found something that linked it to the Wirtz family, maybe that gets reported, maybe it doesn't, because they were the ones who were paying for this independent investigation.
But it does feel like, even though it goes up to a very high level, it has its point that it stops. And we are supposed to trust that the cover-up only went that high, that it died in John McDonough's office, and he never brought it to ownership or anybody else.
Correct. And it's a very hard thing. It's a huge leap of logic to believe, and it sucks that there were no questions, right, that the Wirtzes did not make themselves available to questions. At some point, they will not be able to do that. But this is a stain on the greatest era of modern Hawks hockey.
That's the thing. The taint and stain on this thing is palpable. It is really ugly. And it begins with John McDonough, who came to the Blackhawks after 25 years with the Cubs and with other organizations in Chicago before that, and installed this very, very powerful and controlling insular regime with the Blackhawks, and redefined the entire culture of the organization in a way that was praised universally for years and years and years. Because, they used to not really care about winning. They didn't care about being competitive on the ice. They just wanted to do this. They were just making money. And then McDonough changed everything and made it about the hockey first and foremost. And today we really found out just how far he was willing to go for that. And it's gross. It's really gross. And it feels so similar to countless cover-up investigations that we've dealt with on a sports landscape, whether it's Baylor University or Penn State or USA Gymnastics or Michigan State Gymnastics. They're dealing with it at Michigan right now, where people cover it up to avoid some kind of small stain on the program and avoid some bad press or avoid derailing the train, whether it's money or success. And in the end, it comes out that they valued all of that over the human victims. And it feels gross that it got to this level with the Blackhawks.
And the real shame of all of this, there's a lot of it, obviously, but the thing that we've talked about that I always go back to, it just feels like you need to mention it, is Brad Aldrich did what he did with an adult who was on the Blackhawks. Mm-hmm. And that is awful, right? It's an awful thing. But then they win the cup. They don't report it immediately, going against their own policy. Aldrich gets a ring. He gets his name on the cup. He's celebrated. He's praised by members of the organization. And then he goes and gets other jobs. And then it's years later, he's arrested, found guilty, doing the exact same thing, this time to a minor.
To a minor.
16 years old.
They allowed him a day with the cup, and he did that in Houghton, Michigan, as his celebratory day with the Stanley Cup, brought the cup to the high school there, and ends up as a volunteer hockey coach for that high school. And that's where he commits his crime 3 years later. And so that is gross.
Yeah, that's just, I don't know how you live with yourself. I don't know how you look yourself in the mirror. Blinded by winning, arrogance, competitiveness, in some ways those can be admirable traits of the driven, but you would like to think that there would always be some human decency in there where that would come to a point. And from this report, we have learned, based on recollections of that meeting, that John McDonough was basically like, I'll handle it. Everyone else focus on hockey. Yeah. We might never get back to this far in the playoffs. Because this happened, the meeting was Western Conference Finals. And then, hey, we're not reporting this. We have a Stanley Cup to win. And it's just gross. And so he leaves the team, and it all goes from there. And so what happens next? For the Hawks, it seems like they pay a $2 million fine. Everyone from 2010 is gone. They try to continue to rehab their image.
And they'll have to settle or go to court for these lawsuits.
Right.
It should be said that in the report, Donald Fehr, the NHLPA director at the time, was apparently informed in 2010 and 2011 about the assault of John Doe 1, and he now denies recollection of that. There are things like that. There are things in the report about players in the next year's training camp, throwing out name calling to John Doe 1 and saying to him, "Where's your boyfriend? Where's your boyfriend?"
It was all openly known that the incident happened.
So that's part of the torment that this John Doe had to go through, was with the players themselves as well.
So we had an opportunity to talk to Susan Loggins, who is the high profile attorney for John Doe 1 and John Doe 2. Earlier today, and here's just a snippet of, you listen to the whole thing on the podcast page, but here's a snippet of the conversation. Susan Loggins is the attorney both for John Doe, who was a member of the Blackhawks at the time, and also for John Doe, who Brad Aldridge assaulted after leaving the Blackhawks when he was a youth hockey player and a teenager in Michigan, a minor, 16 years old at the time. Susan, thank you so much for making time on what I'm sure is a busy day. We appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm glad to have the opportunity to speak to my hometown.
What was your impression of that briefing and the subsequent publication of the report by the Blackhawks and Jenner and Block?
Well, my first reaction was total vindication for John Doe. And, I knew what the facts were, not just because of John Doe, but also I was present during a couple of interviews. So I knew that what John Doe said was correct. Not only did the sexual molestation occur, but that the management was told about it by Paul Vincent, the skills coach, and that a meeting was held among management in which they decided not to contact the police department, and also that they had sent this guy Gary down, who was a mental skills coach, to verify that this had happened. And he said in his statement to the investigator that he knew that it had happened and it was true. And I knew that this was a cover-up, that they decided to sweep John Doe under the bus in order to continue their shot at the Stanley Cup and win the Stanley Cup. All of that was not surprising to me. What I was really impressed by with the independent investigator is that they went further and found that there was a policy that the Blackhawks had at the time that required immediate investigation, and they swept that under the rug too. I mean, this was a concerted decision on the part of management that this would hurt the Stanley Cup chances, so they were going to let it go. But what the public needs to understand is it didn't stop there. I mean, after they won the Stanley Cup, they then engraved this, or had the guy's name engraved on the cup, allowed him to take it home for a day in Michigan as a hero, which is where John Doe, too, got swept up. And they did innumerable additional events with John Doe, one present, where he had to be present with his sexual assailant. Well, they just ignored that this happened after they already won. That's the thing.
Yeah, so we definitely want to talk about what happened after that three-week delay. But with the three-week delay, first and foremost, it appears that everybody who was in that room, Susan, no longer works for the Blackhawks. There are two people who work for other organizations in the NHL, Joel Quenneville, a coach, and Kevin Cheveldayoff, a GM. But it seems that everybody who was in that room is gone from the Blackhawks. Did the Blackhawks go further, far enough into their own organization at this point in removing people who knew, or did they have further to go, in your opinion?
So the answer is there were additional people that knew. There were secretaries that knew. There were other people that were made aware of it. Whether those people are still there or not, I don't know, because remember, the Blackhawks blocked us in court from doing any discovery. So this is why I'm very cynical about them. So they conducted their own investigation through a really good investigator, okay? But they've been able to interview 129 people while we haven't been able to interview anybody. So I don't know who's still there or isn't there that knew at the time, so it's impossible to answer that. I mean, I think the thing is that it's undisputed now. This is the key point. It's undisputed that they threw John Doe to the wolves and totally deserted him in order to win the Stanley Cup. And, you know, people might say, well, this was a huge deal. This is our hometown team and all that kind of thing. But when you don't have morals, what kind of victory is that? You know, you ruin a person's life to do this. And I'm going to go back to the point that the Blackhawks have continued to act the same way. They acted the same way after they won the Stanley Cup, and they acted the same way when I called their lawyer prior to filing suit and asked them to do an investigation to validate that this happened and said we were willing to discuss it, and they said no. They just denied that it happened. So there's a certain amount of arrogance that has existed from day one that's a very unhealthy to everybody.
Susan Loggins is our guest. She's the attorney for both John Doe 1 and John Doe 2. The Blackhawks today said they hope to, in their words, reach a resolution with John Doe 1 and John Doe 2, your clients. Was that news to you, or had you already heard from them on that front?
No, but I predicted that once this report came out that they would make a statement like that, because after all, they need a reason to have waited this long, right? So now they have the independent investigator, and we were told they didn't really know about it. And so now they have a reason to discuss resolution. But I haven't heard from them. And, you know, this is the same team that is trying to dismiss the case. So I want to see if they tell their lawyers withdraw your motion to dismiss the case. Let's see how contrite they really are. You know, it's the same old story, like, okay, we're at fault and we're sorry, but we're going to use every possible trick in our bag to get out of really having to rectify the situation. And, you know, the only remedy that's available is money damages. You know, if we don't, there's no way to ever give this guy his life back or his hockey career. So, you know, I want to see where, if they put action behind their words today.
So that was Susan Loggins. You can hear the entire 15-minute interview on the podcast page or the Odyssey Rewind app. And what happens next? I think the biggest shoe to drop now in the world of hockey anyway will be Joel Quenneville, right? I mean, this guy is obviously a Chicago sports titan and legend, but he said recently that he did not know about this until the lawsuit. But it is in this independent report
that he was in that room.
That he was in that room
when it was discussed in May, and they decided to wait until the end of the cup and
took no action for 3 weeks.
Yep.
Right. So, and in the report, there is an evaluation of Brad Aldrich that Joel Quenneville wrote in June, at the end of June of that year, after he had already resigned from the organization, of which he mentions nothing about it, and said he did a great job for the coaching staff in preparing us for all of our meetings and coordinating several tasks that we forwarded his way. Brad has several people relying on him at the same moment, and he has a way of deflecting and accommodating everyone at once. Congrats on winning the Stanley Cup.
You know, there's a detail that was mentioned by the lawyer as he went through some of the report findings. He said that nobody denies that a sexual encounter happened between John Doe and Brad Aldrich. The difference is that John Doe says it was not consensual, and that he was threatened with a bat, that he was threatened, his hockey future was threatened by Brad Aldrich, and that's why it happened. But Brad Aldrich told everybody it was consensual, and it appears that everybody either bought that completely within the organization or just didn't want to believe it was worse than that and just did not believe this victim at all.
I'm surprised, frankly, that Joel Quenneville is still employed.
Hours after this report came out.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I mean, he said this summer, I first learned of these allegations through the media earlier this summer. And this independent report comes out. Now, maybe the Panthers need to read the full 130-page report and talk to their attorneys and look at his contract, but I don't know, man. I don't know how you can be in that room, have that report, have what happened, and then still allow it to go on, frankly. I will be very surprised if you pronounced his name better than I could, the GM of the Jets.
Kevin Cheveldea.
Thank you. And Joel Quenneville. I'll be surprised if either one of them is still employed in the next 24 hours.
Yeah. You know, locally, are those organizations waiting to see if there's enough of an outcry that they have to do something? It's cynical to think about it like that.
Florida Panthers, as I'm Googling here, released a statement. At this time, Commissioner Gary Bettman has indicated that he will be meeting with Joel Quenneville to discuss the events highlighted in the Jenner and Block October 2021 report. Accordingly, we have no comment. So they're hiding behind, well, the league. So just protecting the powerful at all costs, again and again and again and again. So
all the lookbacks, the whole era, so stained, you know, and like, hey, it's the anniversary. Let's call Coach Q. All those kinds of things are just, you know, they're not going to happen as cleanly as they would have. And that is justified, that those legacies are screwed up.
Texter said, why are we ignoring the players? To be honest with you, I haven't had a chance to read the 130-page report yet. It got released as the show was coming on the air. The players were interviewed in this. You mentioned like excerpts that other reporters have talked about them mocking him at practice. I don't know what you do in that spot, to be honest with you. Like, are you going to just outright release players for making comments in practice 11 years ago? I don't know. Like, no, I honestly don't know what accountability there would be for. I mean, there's only a couple of guys left, right? It's only Kane and Taves.
Yeah, I don't know the specific.
I haven't read the report yet, so I don't know.
What you do for specific accountability. But you can obviously see what kind of culture is present, or at least was present then, to not only allow this kind of victim shaming or victim non-believing, but then derision towards the victim as well, to just go along part and parcel with it as everybody's protected above.
Yeah, but I mean, at a minimum, like all of those teammates who are still in the league, either here or elsewhere, right?
Yeah.
Like Duncan Keith is playing, but he's playing elsewhere. Like when those guys speak next, they have to be asked about this and the specifics of what was in the report.
They will. They will. And it should be said that I know Jay Zawoski had back a couple of months ago, and I had been in touch with a former player who was there at the time and was disgusted with the way that things were and stood by the coach that he said reported it. And was upset, very, very upset with the way the Blackhawks have dealt with this. So it's not like all of the players were complicit in that way.
Coming up next, Matt Spiegel will sell us all on a rooting interest for this World Series and says that there is a lesson from one of the teams that the White Sox need to learn from and implement immediately. It's next on The Score.
Today, as you may or may not know, it doesn't matter, is the opening of the World Series. What I'd like to suggest is that we change the work detail tonight so that we can watch the ball game.
Well, Mr. McMurphy, what you're asking is that we change a very carefully worked out schedule.
A little change never hurt, huh? A little variety?
Well, it's not necessarily true, Mr. McMurphy. You know, some men on the ward take a long, long time to get used to the schedule. Change it now, and they might find it very disturbing.
The schedule. I mean, they can go back to the schedule after the series. I'm talking about the World Series, Nurse Reggie.
It's a big deal. Braves and Astros, bottom of the hour, brought to you by DuckDuckGo. Hundreds, maybe thousands, will be watching.
Oh, man. There'll be some millions, buddy.
I know. I'm kidding.
Yeah. Well, you know, if I was going to measure baseball's excellence by viewing numbers, I'd be a sad, sad man.
Oh, if you enjoy it, that's all that matters.
That's right. And if other people enjoy it, too. But it's not enough to just root for the Astros' demise, right? That's not enough to hook you or hook most people.
Especially because they're probably going to win.
Yeah, it's like one of the best lineups I've ever seen.
Yeah, they're
just
really good.
They're really, really good. But I've really enjoyed the Braves, and I'm realizing there's some things about the Braves that people might not realize that they should realize. And we can speak to both fandoms here, but here's the thing. July 11th, the All-Star break hits. You remember what the Cubs' record was? Remember how many games under 500 they were at
the
All-Star break?
They had the 11-game losing streak. No, I don't.
Two games under.
Okay. Was it two games?
Yeah, there was. Thank you, Shane. 44 and 46 were the Cubs on the 10th of July, right there.
All right.
The Atlanta Braves on the 10th of July were 44 and 44. The next day they did play their game because it wasn't rained out like the Cubs was. They were 44 and 45, one game under at the break. And you know what the Braves decided to do? To go for it. Alex Anthopoulos and the Braves front office at that point had lost the best player in the National League. Ronald Acuña Jr. was number one in wins above replacement in the National League at the time. Number one. And they had three complete no-names in the outfield at the time because they had Marcell Ozuna, who was away from the team since May 2. On the 15th of July, they get Jock Peterson. And then at the deadline, Eddie Rosario for Pablo Sandoval, who the Indians eventually cut. Adam Duvall, Jorge Soler. They added four outfielders and said, screw it. We're going for it. They were 4.5 games back and two games under 500. And those four have been incredible. They've absolutely gone for it, and those four have combined for a total of more than three wins above replacement just by themselves in half a season. And in the playoffs, they're even better. 10 of the Braves' 12 postseason home runs are by those guys. 24 of their 39 postseason RBIs are by those guys. So it's about a team looking at themselves and saying, not let's pack it in and sell off. If that pissed you off, this is not a team that did that. This is a team that said, let's go for it and see what can happen. And they caught themselves some lightning with every single one of those guys. And two of them are former Cubs as well. And they're Jock Peterson. There's a lot of reasons to root for him. I find him very likable, and there's other stuff there. But just in essence, you want a team that goes for it? This is a team that went for it.
I like that. I mean, so much of those decisions is also a product of, you know, how bad can you get? Are you rebuilding? Are you in a window of contention? Like, what would a draft pick really mean for us? And the Braves are in their window of contention. So selling off or accepting losing or anything like that would be a ridiculous thing to do, even with a devastating injury, but also a product of a winnable division, right? Like, that equivalent team in the NL West doesn't do that. They don't go about it in the same way.
The NL Central, Cubs convinced that they couldn't get to the Brewers, and I understand that. Frankly, I understood it at the time.
Cubs at the end of their window was the thing.
Like, yes, Cubs, with everybody expiring.
That's the difference, right? The Braves already knew, hey, we have the same core coming back next year, right? Like, Acuna,
except for Freeman, who is a free agent.
Freeman's the big one. Freeman's the big one, but they're not at a point where next year the Atlanta Braves will be expecting to not be contenders. I was looking at the numbers because, like, when the World Series comes out, they will post next year's World Series odds, and the Dodgers are the favorite. You know what the Cubs were at one site that I saw? 100-1.
Wow.
Last in baseball with the Pirates.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. They were at the bottom.
Well, they got a lot of holes on that roster.
Tied with five other teams for longest odds in all of baseball for next year. So just, it would have been ridiculous for the Cubs off that losing streak with those contracts coming up to say, no, we can go out and win this year. For the Braves,
with a lot more things under contract, fewer things expiring, clearly at a different point in their life cycle, I agree.
Yeah, so, but doesn't mean it's not admirable and impressive, but their run right now, as I see it, is one of opportunity. They won 88 games.
Yeah.
But they got to host, you know, they got to avoid the wild card game. You get to host the NLCS, and then you get hot in the postseason, and you make a bit of a run. Like, they are a story of, you know, overcoming adversity. That is absolutely true.
Mm-hmm.
But they are also, if they win the World Series, they will be a team like that 83-win Cardinal team that people point to.
They'll be thought of in that way, or the 87-win Minnesota Twins team.
Thank you very much.
It should be said also, they targeted the market inefficiency of power-hitting veteran outfielders like Duvall and Soler and Rosario. Like, they gave up very, very little for all of those guys. Very low-end prospects for all of them. But I mentioned there's something about one of these participants that the White Sox should copy. And this is also the Braves. The Braves in 2019 and 2020, Danny, during that 2-year span, they shifted less than any team in baseball defensively. Literally dead last over the last two seasons in shift percentage, right? Since May, that has changed. During a homestand in May, and Mike Petriello at MLB.com was dissecting this then and put it in a piece today, they changed their entire mindset, and Brian Snitker said, okay, and they started to shift. Since July 1st, they are number 2 in shift percentage in the entire league. And since May, teams that have turned the biggest percentage of ground balls into outs, right? Cardinals number 1, Braves number 2. They adapted, adjusted, and said, the shift works. We should start doing this more. Yes, we'll give up some gorks and some hits in spots where guys used to be. But overall, the math guys are right. This does work. They changed. I mean, that is a massive difference.
Yeah, it is.
Dead last in 2019 and 2020, and now number 2 in MLB. And here they are, by the way. They listen to their metrics, guys. And this, as you know, is my main hope for the White Sox in this offseason. Find a way to get the message across to Tony, whatever new coaches you might install, however you have to do it.
Still haven't heard from Rick Hahn.
That is true.
Now won't hear from him till after the World Series.
You got to shift. White Sox were 22nd of 30 in that percentage of ground balls that are turned into outs. 22nd of 30 at 59%. Imagine an extra 5% of ground balls that turn into outs over the course of a season. It's a big, big deal.
and my Bette Rivers video, they asked me to do a video today for the World Series. They were like, do whatever you want. You know, do series, do game one, do whatever. And I do think the Astros are better, so I'll ride with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm curious what you think about the matchup tonight, because McCullers is out.
Yeah.
So Framber Valdez starts. The Braves bad this year against lefties.
Yeah, and Valdez was incredible against the Red Sox in his final start, went eight innings.
Right. He was great in the last one. In theory, with no McCullers, if this series goes long, he could pitch in games 1, 4, and 7. 25-1 to be MVP. I know their story is offense and their lineup.
But if they get a starting pitching performance for the ages after people thinking that they had not enough of that all the way through.
Pretty good odds, I thought. Like yeah. For the game one starter coming off of a gem against the Red Sox, a team that doesn't do so well against lefties.
That is pretty good odds for your
Framber
one starter.
Framber Valdez. There mm-hmm. you go. Little rooting interest. Now, of course, you would need... I have found myself in a position to root for the Astros.
Yeah,
after
what are
all
you doing?
You said. Well, I'm just telling you. I bet them.
Yeah.
So it's a way to bet it fun, Speaks. You need rooting interest. Who do you like? So what am I doing? I'm telling you. All that stuff that you just gave was amazing.
Yes.
I'm not still holding grudges over the Astros for cheating. I believe everybody was cheating. They were just explicit with it and got caught. So go Dusty Baker and go my bets. And by the way, I also believe I like when a sport crowns the truest champion. I believe the Astros are a better team. So them, you know what I mean?
They're a better offense, but you know the Braves pitching is pretty cool. Some young
Charlie
guys,
Morton's great.
Young guys like Ian Anderson, who have now pitched in a ton of playoff games. Charlie Morton, you know, with his fourth different playoff team in the last 4 years, is just absolutely insane. They've got some great bullpen stories. Tyler Matzek is a former big time prospect who had the yips and was totally out of the game and has worked
great
his way
in the
back.
Dodger series.
Yep, yes, he sure was. So. There's some stuff there, and I know I'll be locked and loaded. Tanny Shane, White Sox interest, baseball interest for World Series. Tanny, for our game,
the shifting thing is an interesting nugget, and I do hope that's what Rick Hahn is convening to talk about, and hopefully we'll hear more about that after the World Series. But other than that, I don't know. I'm still very sour over the White Sox exit. I don't know if there's anything you can watch from these games that you can say like, oh yeah, if the Sox can do this, then they'll definitely be better next year. I'm looking at the White Sox exit as like, okay, a bad four game stretch.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying not to panic too much, but I Astros still very much hateable, you know. So there's that angle that'll never go away, no matter you know what the White Sox role you know was in them advancing, but. Nate Jones would get a ring. Nate Jones, former White Sox, started the season with the Braves.
Wow.
So there's that. You know, he actually retired and he's coaching in Kentucky there. So yeah, I'm above all, I'm not interested in the World Series. I don't think.
Oh,
I'm really
so
not
sad.
Either. I'll have it on in the background. You
so
know, tonight
sad.
will be a tough go. Watching that one, but yeah, not big interest there for me.
Yeah, I'll have it on tonight in the background when I'm making dinner, but it's not going to get sound. I'm going to be listening to music or a podcast or something. Like, that's unfortunately the state of this game.
Yeah.
If your team isn't in it.
You say all the time, Danny, it's a local sport. It's a regional sport. It truly is.
Well, I didn't watch it last year because I thought the Texas thing was weird, you know.
With the chainsaw massacre?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was weird.
Don't spoil it for me.
With the secession, the fact they wanted to secede from the Union. Yeah,
all of that, you know. But now that there's going to be fans there, like, that's a little bit more intriguing. But the fact that it's still the Astros, I think that's what, like, if it were any other American League team, for the Red Sox, I'm like, all right, this is interesting. But the Astros, they still, ugh, yicky.
Well, we carved out our ground earlier on how we can root for Dusty Baker and not the Astros. We want, at least I do, I want the Braves to win. I want Dusty to manage just a flawless World Series, and I have Altuve and Correa commit like 5 errors a game. Just blow it that way.
So it's not Dusty's fault that he loses?
Have it be undeniably on those Jamokes.
I don't know if there was any audio proof of your baseball heartbreaking, but you did a eloquent, passionate plea and building a case for why people should root for the Braves.
Uh-huh.
I was like, I don't know, man. I'm rooting for the Astros because I bet them. And you're like, all right, what about my R game brethren, Tanny and Shane? And they were both like,
nah,
no interest, not going to be watching.
And the question is, are you going to root for the Braves? And Shane and I are obviously
100%. We're rooting for the Braves.
Yeah, but you're not watching. You don't care.
General interest in the World Series at all.
A couple other quick things. Brian Snitker, the manager of the Braves, his son is the hitting coach for the Astros.
Hate him.
That's kind of cool. Tyler Matzik, as a texter point out, high school teammate of Kyle Hendricks. So you got that. You got Soler. No. You got Jock Peterson. How about this? Music people. Ian Anderson, lead singer of Jethro Tull, also a Braves pitcher. Chris Martin, lead singer of Coldplay, also a member of the Braves.
Him. Just the same names, though, speaks.
No, these are the same people.
No, if Chris Martin will go and pitch the eighth inning today while singing Fix You from the 2003 record or whatever it is, I'm on board.
That's one of Ruben's favorite songs, by the way.
Oh, my God. The buildup in the end to Fix You could make a grown man cry.
Yeah, you should come over and listen to Ruben play it on the piano. It makes me makes me very emotional. And then Will Smith, the rapper.
I know that song from the newsroom.
Will Smith, the rapper, is also the closer for the Atlanta Braves. So they have three guys, three musicians on that roster.
Baseball and, trying to expand.
And my local Jewel has a Dusty Baker that I see there often. And Dusty Baker, I think, is the manager of the Astros.
Oh, my God.
Nailed that.
Wow. Last joke I ever expected to come from Danny. Just a
He's been working with
himself.
Me too long.
Yeah, what the hell just happened?
Just stating facts here. Yeah. Just like speaks.
Yeah, I can't sue you for slander. It's Parkinson Spiegel on the score.
Redirect.
Following us, it's Big Ant Heron with Lance Briggs. The latest Miller Lite Top Draft Show, 6-9, Flo and Santos in Chicago. Register for a chance to win Miller Lite loft tickets to a future Bears home game brought to you by Miller Lite, proud beer partner of the Bears. Taste Bears fans can depend on. It's Miller time. World Series tonight, huh?
World Series and no Bulls. No NFL.
No Bulls till Thursday.
Yeah.
No NFL till Thursday.
You're hurting.
It's not fair.
That's pretty normal, right? They usually don't play on Tuesdays?
Usually.
All right.
Except during pandemic years.
NFL? Yeah, the NFL doesn't normally play.
Yeah.
Bulls have a full slate.
It'd be a good night for you to catch up and watch, what, highlights of NFL games?
Probably watch some highlights of NFL.
Condensed games.
Good doubleheader on TNT. Sixers, Knicks, and Nuggets, Jazz. My boy Adam Lefko in the Ernie Johnson role for that show, so I'll try to catch some of that. But got to catch up on John Oliver. I watched Succession. I watched Curb. Watched Insecure. So I'm pretty caught up.
If listeners are looking for something to do tonight, listen to our interview with Adam McKay. If you're at all a fan of any of his work, it was really fun to finally get to talk to him and go through just about everything we wanted to.
Yeah, I mean, I could have kept going for another hour if he allowed it to, and we didn't have to, you know, pay the bills around here with these pesky commercials. But yes, please do listen to it. The guy who, you know, wrote Anchorman and Step Brothers and also Vice and The Big Short and 100 other things was on the show for like 25 minutes today. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. In addition to Joe Ostrowski and Hub Arkish, they were our guests. Connor O'Donnell, the Twitch chat and the video stream, thank you, sir. Shane Reardon is our executive producer. Chris Tannehill makes us sound better than we are each and every day. For Matt Spiegel, I'm Danny Parkins. Go see Big Ant Heron at Flo and Santos. He's there until 9 o'clock. Lance Briggs joins him at 7. It's Parkins and Spiegel on the score.
I'm just saying. Hey, guys, come on. Get your shots. Wear your mask. Take care.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.